Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by HuntStand. HuntStand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, HuntStand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software, and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. HuntStand. Upgrade your arsenal.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast with your host this week, Nate and Micah.
How's it going?
It's going good, dude. I'm trying not to say I'm excited for this week's show. I say that every week.
You either say we're excited or we got a good one for you or something ridiculous.
Yeah, trying to
mix it up a little bit. So today's show, we have a good buddy of yours.
We have a good buddy of mine. I'm excited. Oh, damn it. I'm excited to talk with him. Jeff and I always talk about hunting. And so when we started this podcast, he was somebody who I wanted to talk to about this particular subject today, hunting small property. So today's guest, we have Jeff Wilper on. I grew up with Jeff. Jeff and I have known each other since we were 5 years old or whatever age we were when we started kindergarten, and we've been friends ever since. And Jeff, in my opinion, is one of the better hunters I know. In fact, you know, he's the younger brother of another one of our returning guests, Scott Wilper. Probably the best two hunters I know as brothers. That those guys know how to hunt, and
they kill a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff on their walls.
So Jeff, you know, what I respect about Jeff and I admire about him is, He's not hunting, you know, these most gorgeous properties. I mean,
yeah, a lot of times it's small property land or whatever.
Yeah, he used to hunt 8 acres right there by my house, 7 or 8 acres, and, you know, was able to I don't know if he ever killed anything off of there, but he was so close so many times. And on that small of a piece of property to almost kill some big deer.
It's pretty impressive.
That's pretty good. I don't think I could do it. So he comes on and gives some good pointers to people about how he does it, what he finds successful on the small properties he hunts. And maybe that'll help somebody that's got small property figure that out. So before we get into it, we got two sponsors for today's show. Alps Outdoors. Check them out at alpsgear.com. Packs, whatever you need.
Yeah, camping gear, all sorts of things.
All sorts of stuff. Good Missouri-based company, good partner of ours.
Yep.
And then Huntworth Gear.
Love them.
I like their stuff. We're going to put some stuff to the test coming up. And we're
here in a few weeks. So
not even a few weeks.
Yeah, week and a half.
Yeah.
We'll be on the mountain in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Should be.
So check them out, too, at huntworthgear.com. Yeah. I'm sure that you can still get stuff before season starts, and they have it all at good prices. So check them out, too.
Promo code.
Gosh. MWW15, I think.
Yep, MWW15, pretty sure.
And but anyway, like I said, we're excited for today's show with our guest, Jeff Wilper, and hope everybody enjoys it. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. Okay, with us tonight is my buddy, Jeff Wilper. Jeff, what's going on, man?
How's it going, man?
Good. I say this every damn week. I need to think of a new term, but I am excited about this one.
Well, I mean, hopefully we're excited about all the ones that we do.
We don't, you know, I guess
I say that's why we do them.
Yeah. But tonight's show, like we said in the intro, Jeff, we're going to get into hunting small property.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the people listening to us, they've got to be hunting small property. I would guess. So before we get into that, obviously, we're going to have Jeff introduce himself. If anybody have noticed, Jeff's last name is also Wilper. And Jeff is the younger brother of another one of our guests, Scott, who's been on the show a few times.
Turkeys. Makes the custom turkey calls and all that. So.
Yep. Jeff and I grew up together. We've been friends for, 25, 30 years, as long as we've known each other. I mean, hell, we were probably 5 years old when we...
Little League football.
Yep. So, you know, we've grown up together. Jeff's been a hunter his whole life, an outdoorsman his whole life. And so I think this will be a good topic. If your last name is Wilper, you know how to kill deer. That's all I know.
Yes, that is a fact.
Between you, your brother, and your dad, and your uncles and all that.
Oh, yeah.
You're some killers. So, all right, well, introduce yourself first. Tell us where you are or who you are, where you're from, and then we'll just kind of get into your background and go from there.
Yeah, Jeff Wilper. I grew up in Oak Grove. How old are we now?
I don't want to say.
I'm turning 40 this year, so... Grew up hunting down south by Arkansas first, and then we started hunting up north, and then kind of in between, a few properties here and there around Oak Grove, smaller properties.
Yep. So, and you've been hunting your whole life, I mean,
yeah,
from what I can remember.
Used to be February's was the only month off. There was always something to do.
Yeah.
So
that's the great thing about Missouri is you can always hunt something, fish something, do something outside.
Absolutely.
So who was one of your bigger influences, girl? I mean, did you and Scott do a lot together hunting-wise, or is it mostly with your dad?
Yeah, we always did the family trips, you know, and then my uncle was a big-time hunter. It was always...
was that Kenny?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it was the campfires and, the late nights around the fire, and if it's brown, it's down, you know, and we were happy to kill a doe back then. So,
oh, yeah.
And then kind of escalated from there, but it was fun. Definitely changes over time how you hunt and how you approach it. So
yeah, well, and you've definitely had some success. I don't want to give away, but I'm looking at dozens of dead deer right now. And
yes,
you know, you're no different than your brother. You have a knack for it, obviously. You know, and there's people when I talk about hunting, there's people that I look at and go, man, I wish I could just kill. You know what I'm saying? Just be a killer. Does that make sense? There's some hunters that just know how to kill stuff.
Yeah, they can just make it happen every year, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yes.
Russell's one. My brother-in-law Russell's one of them. It just seems like if he says he's going to go out and kill something today, he goes and does it. And, you know, it seems like he knows what he's doing. And there's other people that have just that knack to do it.
Right.
And you're one of those. I'm going to go kill a deer tomorrow, and then you go do it.
I feel like 20% of hunters have 80% of the hunts, good hunts, and then 80% of hunters have 20% of the good hunts. There's that one 20% that's putting in the extra work,
yeah,
taking the extra mile, and it pays off.
I'm one of the 99% that has 1% good hunt every once in a while.
Right.
Of course, you haven't been doing it as long as some of
us. No, you know what's funny is I was talking about this with my wife the other day. She's like, why didn't you ever hunt, you know, growing up? I said, I honestly don't know. I had a few friends, you being one of them, that hunted, but I didn't grow up in the country.
Right.
You know, I grew up in town, and my parents, you know, my dad camped and went fishing, but it's just never something that I got into with my buddies back then. And, you did it. Chad did a little bit.
Right.
And, I can't really think of anybody else, you know, until we got a little older that hunted. I know Dusty, we got older.
Just
but,
opening weekend of rifle season hunters.
Right.
Nobody really bow hunted that much.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's changed over time.
Definitely.
Right.
I would say bow hunting's definitely gotten popular.
Absolutely.
But it's just, you know, one of them deals where you look at Jeff, and if you gave him 15 days a year, there's going to be a deer down. Now, problem is, we all are growing up, and we've got kids and jobs now. And
I'd love to have 15 days, man. Yeah. I ain't had 15 days in a long time.
Yeah, it gets difficult. But that's the cool part about today's show is we're going to talk about when you do have those opportunities, a lot of people just have an opportunity on a small piece of ground. That's pretty much all you've hunted for at least the last, as long as I've known.
Right.
As long as I've been hunting, pretty much you are hunting tiny pieces of property. And I would guess a lot of the people listening to us don't have access to 500 acres where they can do whatever they want. They've got, you know, 20 acres that they can hunt.
Right.
So I guess we should probably quantify or specify what are we going to call small piece of property?
I'd say 50 or less.
You agree?
50
or less? Yeah, 50 or less acres.
So as we're talking about,
which is, that's still a good chunk.
Still a good chunk. Yeah.
I've hunted 7 acres. I've hunted 11 acres, 20 acres. Yeah. So
whatever you get the chance to.
Right.
You know, right. You know, I mean, it's better than not hunting because you don't have anything.
Absolutely.
You know, if somebody gives you permission on their little 10-acre spot, you really don't know. But, we'll as we're talking, that's what we'll consider is 50 acres or less.
Okay.
So when you get permission on a new property, or, you know, if you have you've owned a little couple small pieces of property here and there too, what are some of the first things you do if you're going to hunt it? I mean, do you pretty much any piece of property you think you can kill a deer on if given the chance?
Well, I think every property
unless you're
different.
Downtown Kansas City.
Right. Well, I live on 10 acres here, and I mean, it's hard to come by a deer here.
Right.
You know, I've put a food plot in, and it's just, they're just not here. Occasionally, you know, every now and again, but not worth trying to go through a bunch of effort.
Right.
But, you know, get a salt lookout, run a camera and see what you got there. And then I feel like cover, water, and food. They got to have all three. And if you're lacking one of them around that little piece of property, try to make that happen on that little piece of property. If they got to go a long ways to get water, try to make your little water hole. Or if food's not everywhere, a little food plot, whatever you can do. But if you can keep the does around there, you know, come November, there'll be bucks around. So definitely when you get on the property, look around. Onyx help, you know, Onyx app, that helps see what's around.
Yeah.
My 7 acres, there was no food close.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That little food plot got hammered, you know.
Yeah, I remember when you put that in.
Closest corn was, you know, up by you.
Right. And
right.
that was a crow flies, half a mile probably.
Right. So a little clover food plot there, and I put in some turnips, and they hammered it. Now, sometimes some of them farms were just cover, were somewhere they could feel safe, you know, not getting bumped out all the time. Maybe that's your ticket to it.
You don't have to have, like, the destination property.
No.
If you really think about it, only a few people do have that where they live, quote unquote.
Right.
I mean,
you just got to have something they need.
Yeah. You just got to be willing to figure out, you know, like I think I said this, I can't remember, maybe I didn't say this on the show, but we've said it talking before. A lot of times we'll record like two shows worth before we actually record, like we did tonight.
Right.
So it's sometimes I almost prefer a smaller property. You know, like one of my main properties I hunt now is maybe 15 acres.
Right.
Or so of huntable. It's a 40 acre farm, but only 15 or so of it's huntable. And it's almost like once you got time to figure it out and you figure it out, well, there's no guesswork anymore. I mean,
right.
It ain't 400 acres where you're like, well, what if tomorrow they're, you know, on the northwest corner?
Right. And I hunt the other side of the farm. There is no other side. See, right. my place is like two pinch points coming on and coming off.
Yep.
One's a westerly wind, one's an easterly wind, and I pretty much hunt them two pinch. Great access to get in, great access to get out. Very little pressure. I never walk in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much right on the boundary lines. And when the time's right and the wind's right, right time of the year, slip in there.
Yeah.
But which I do own 45 acres, and it is, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's a good piece of property, which is paid off. But we used to hunt it. We all walked in, all four of us scattered out all across the middle of it, all four corners. We ran half the deer out on the way in. And then I started kind of approaching it different and seeing twice as many deer.
Yeah.
Started seeing more bucks, you know. So definitely approaching it different how you hunt that small. Definitely helped.
Well, I mean, 45 acres is still small.
Oh, absolutely.
In the grand scheme of things.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, what did they say? Like a buck's core area is probably around 30, I think.
Right. Especially when they
get older. Once they get older, it's just smaller and smaller.
Right.
So if you can make it where your property's that small core area,
absolutely,
you got something going for you.
Yep.
We're close to it. I mean, you know, you're in there all the time messing around and laying scent down every other day.
Right.
Well, maybe he moves further away.
Right.
You know, instead of maybe being the next property over, and then during the rut, the ladies are there, and
right.
he might come through.
That's like my food plot. I feel like a deer could walk a mile at night and go eat, be comfortable, and then walk back to a bedding area that he's not bothered in. Mm-hmm. So you could have the best-looking food plot in the world, and you're never going to get daylight activity if you're in there jacking around all the time, which with kids it's hard now because they want to stomp around. So it's
yep.
it's different. But I think I saw something where Michael Waddell killed a radio collared deer.
I seen that one.
And yep. it was going 8 miles to eat corn overnight. And
Gee,
then back
Christmas.
Back to
yep.
somewhere where he felt safe. So, I mean, you could have the best-looking food plot in the world, but they don't feel safe. They're not going to be there in daylight hours.
8 miles to go eat corn.
Jeez. And it showed where he walked, and it was pretty – I mean, every day was close to the same thing. From he was coming off a conservation area, which mm-hmm. probably was why he was there, because I don't think you could hunt there, but walking all the way to that standing corn and then back.
Smart deer.
Yeah.
That's smart deer. So that's – that's a good, I mean, a good point is one of the first things you would do is, you know, get on your Onyx or whatever map.
Right.
You know, and see what is around that little spot that you got.
Absolutely.
So, okay, if I'm nothing but timber and, you know, everything around me is maybe corn or some sort of
right.
ag, okay, well, that's a good thing. So, mine might be the bedding.
Cover, yes.
Or if it's garbage timber. I don't mean that in a bad way, but sometimes, you know, timber's gotten so overgrown or whatever. Going in there and doing some work.
Yes.
You know, maybe doing some cutting. I'm guessing yeah. you've probably messed with before. I know you talk about, you and I have talked about before where on one of your main spots, that 45 acres we're talking about, where you leave it alone in some areas.
Oh yeah. There's 16 to 20 acres that I probably haven't stepped in 5, 6, 7 years. You know.
So there's not been a human, most as far as you know,
right
in that area.
It's river bottom ground that floods all the time, and some of our big trees have died off from disease or flood, and it has gotten so thick from the little trees. Finally, sunlight could get in there. I mean, it's just so thick, and I just leave it like that and let them have it.
Yeah,
I don't stomp around in it. Wait for the time. You know, I hunt a lot last week of October, first week of November. Almost 70% of the deer I've killed come in the first 7 days of November. It could just be absolutely magical, especially when they're safe there. It feels like everything comes there, brings their does there, or looking for does there, and they don't ever get bumped out.
Right.
Where if they can filter through by me, never see me, never smell me, and go on their way, they never knew I was there. I mean, that's what you're looking for. And then
yeah.
Yeah.
So if you had a piece of small property, I'm guessing you would much prefer it to be bedding than you would food.
I do, yes.
Yeah.
Pressure.
I mean, I think anybody that – really understood things. Was it Landon Legacy we had on a few weeks ago? He was talking about, you know, when you're working on your property, everybody's worried about food. I got to do a food plot. I got to do this. Worry about your habitat first because they need cover.
Right.
Then food. You know, they need to feel safe, then they'll eat.
Right.
You know, food's all over the place here, right. At least Missouri, most of the year.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I mean, you're trying to kill them in daylight.
Right.
They can do food and water at night. I mean, that's their nocturnal mostly anyways. So if you could, like, they're not going to feel safe out there eating. They're not going to come out until it's dark anyways or go somewhere else. So,
right.
Yeah, pressure and cover is my number one key. Thicker the better and stay out of it, which is hard. I mean, if that's the only piece of property you are and you want to enjoy it, that's everybody hunts different. But I feel like you stomp it all out or you hunt, don't watch the wind, don't watch your approach.
Mm-hmm.
You may be seeing does and small bucks and getting pictures, but I'm trying to kill the biggest deer in the woods. It ain't going to work if you're doing it.
Yeah.
You got to hunt smart. You got to think a little different if you're trying to do that. Now, if you want to go kill a doe and be done with it, hey, that's fun too. I've shot a lot of does. So.
Yeah, nothing wrong with killing
a doe. No, but if you're trying to kill a big one, a mature deer, I think you got to approach it totally different. And if you only got a small track, you're only going to get so many chances, and you better put every little favor on your side, you know. If it's washing your clothes, I love to park as far away from the land as I can. They think I'm crazy. But I'm halfway down the gravel road, parked on the neighbors, walking. Because I just don't want to be around there, man. The human scent and the entry, if you could ask the neighbor if you can walk through a cow pasture or something,
mm-hmm.
Why stomp right through it? I hate, if you're thinking the deer are going to come by here, I don't want them to cut my trail. So if there's any way I can get into the tree, not saying they wouldn't come behind or whatever.
It's possible.
But where you're planning, if I could get in there without them having to cross my scent anywhere, I mean, that's,
yeah,
get in, get out. Yeah, and I got a couple spots that it's a long walk and you got to go through some extra, but it pays off, absolutely.
So are you pretty strict with your scent regimen? You do the whole washing clothes, spraying down, yes. All that sort of thing?
Yes, which get older and kids, it's harder. But I usually always get dressed at the, at my property next mm-hmm. to the truck. I never wear my outside layer for sure, like in the car, going to the gas station. I put all that on there and I keep them washed and sprayed down. I don't use much scent.
I mean, it helps. It's better than walking out there in cologne and
right.
You know,
which some people use like a cover scent, and I've always thought I don't want them thinking what is that smell and trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I would try to be more scent free than anything.
Right.
Where maybe I could get them come through where they're not registering anything like what is that smell. You know.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely the clothes, the wind, which that come in time. Like we used to go to the biggest tree. You put your stand in the tree that you could see the farthest, and that's where mm-hmm. you sat year after year. And then every 4 years, you were the lucky one to get one. And then I'm like, somehow these guys are killing big deer every year. They got to be approaching it different, which some of the jury videos made you just think about what you're doing. And, I mean, it definitely pays off if you approach it that way, for sure.
You were one of the first ones I listened to when I got serious about bow hunting, and – I started listening to podcasts, actually, Wired to Hunt and Dan Johnson and some of those. And then you're like, yeah, you don't pay attention to your wind?
Right.
I'm like, no, I haven't been. Why? Right. He's like, and that's, I think it might have been you or some. I think it was you. You were like, well, are you seeing deer? No. That's why.
Right. Which we didn't for years either.
You start paying attention to right. that. I mean, I'm not saying I never saw a deer.
Right.
But as soon as I started paying attention to my entry and exit routes
right.
and how I would hunt a particular spot that particular day. Oh shit, there's five does right in front of me or
right.
Whatever. And I mean, at least makes it more enjoyable when you're actually seeing deer,
right.
For the most part,
which we hunted for my whole childhood for years. You never knew what the wind was blowing. You just went and got in the tree. You could see the farthest and right. hope for the best, but it definitely helps, man. And especially on small, you only get so many shots.
Yeah.
I figured maybe one. You're hoping one, maybe two chances at a good deer.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have everything in order to hopefully it plays out right.
So that's maybe one of your biggest pieces of advice for people on small properties is, what's the term? Don't burn it out.
Right. Absolutely.
Well,
now that cameras are like, get them on your phone, that helps you out tremendously and knowing like, hey, this guy's daylighting. Go now.
Yeah.
What before, I just, my place, which I think early season, you can have a little luck, but the October is just slow. And I used to go every weekend and I think I was just burning it out, just mm-hmm. not seeing hardly anything. So then I quit hunting until end of October, definitely the first week of November. I used to take the whole week off
right.
and it was just, could be absolutely magical if the weather was right. Just every which way running, you know.
Yep.
And then you can get away with a little bit more there, and that's pushing on your best spots is then. So if I hunt early, I hunt very edges, just not in my best spots.
Just minimally intrusive. Absolutely. They might not even know you were there.
And you're probably not going to see as many deer, which I'm fine with, you know.
Yep.
Come November, I'm going into where my best spot, and it's the first time I've been in it all year.
Yeah.
So
I think we were talking a few years ago, you were on your way to hunt, and I think you were getting pissed off, you know, like, I'm serious right now, and these things are about to die. And I remember you said something like, and you can correct me, something like, the mature ones, he's in that nasty shit.
And, absolutely.
You know, there's a reason why he's alive, or he's as old as he is, because he goes where he knows we're not going to go.
Right.
And I'm going to go there and figure out a way to kill him.
He's not pressured.
And I'm pretty sure you sent me a picture about 4 hours later. Yeah. I don't remember which deer it was, but
that's what, in my bottoms, it's just thick as can be. And, you know, I think if I work my way down in there, I may see more deer occasionally on hunts that I don't miss from the edges and little pinch points that they don't end up in. But mm-hmm. I think you're just blowing it out, man. I blow them out. 45 acres, it don't take long not to be a deer on the place, you know. And nope. then neighbors and all that, you know. So, yeah. Entry, exit, and try not to blow the whole place out. And then find your time. Like, late season at my place is not good. I think they end up bedding closer to the big ag fields. Like, there's just not the deer in late season at my place. Rut, my place is on fire.
Don't take your time off near Christmas.
Absolutely. Yeah, find out. And I think every property is different. You could find out what time, you know, maybe it's early season. Cloverfield early, first week of September. Maybe that's the time to be in there. But that last week of October, first week of November is just unbelievable. Which, yeah. I think there's big deer everywhere. You just don't see them.
Right.
That's why they're big. And, like, I think Stan Potts killed, like, a 200-incher, like, right behind a gun range. Probably nobody steps in there. You know, he's fine with the shots.
Live there, probably.
Right. Yep. So, yeah, there's big deer everywhere, but they're nocturnal, man. They get pressured and bumped around. They're not going to daylight unless that November rut gets them a lot in trouble. But
oh, yeah.
If the rut wasn't a thing, it'd be a lot harder to kill a mature.
Oh, my God.
Whitetail in general, but right. a mature buck for sure. Because that's usually what gets a lot of them killed is
absolutely.
You know, they're thinking with a different head.
Right.
So,
and it. I mean, I think that's why Iowa and Kansas have big deer. You know, they don't have that rifle season during the rut, and you're not losing them bucks that are just blind to everything. Which,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year it hit right at the time.
Oh, I mean, dude, it was insane.
Right.
That was one of the craziest opening days I've ever seen in my life.
Which the weather was right last year in October too, mid October, and yeah. I didn't go because I always wait till November. But the weather was right. You know.
Yep.
So definitely. Cold fronts, north wind during October. If I got a day off, I'd like to go. But you're 75 degrees and sunny. I got Saturday off.
Not worth it.
Not
worth it. Spend that day with the kids.
Yes. So I'll try to find another piece of property that, you know, is not real promising. Like, right. I'll have 8 acres, 10 acres behind somebody's house where I could take the kids on a weekend that's probably going to be slow. And maybe we'll see a couple does, make some noise, have fun, and get out of there. That's what. It's nice to pick up some places like that where your best spot, you don't have to stomp out on the weekend that you want to take the kids and be loud and drag around. So
let's talk about weather. I mean, when you have a property that is small that you don't want to burn up because, you know, you can't go hunt the northeast corner tonight,
right.
You know, it is the corner.
Yeah.
You know, this is what it is. What are some weather stuff what's some weather patterns you're looking for that might make you go, hey, I'm going to give tonight a go because this might be right for me.
Right. Anytime that cold front comes through, south to north wind.
Are you wanting to be there, like, during that or
I've killed
before it, after it?
After it. Up north, my spot, my 45 acres, it's like when the front goes through and it turns into a westerly wind. It seems like I've killed 5-6 deer on that westerly wind after the front's gone through the next day,
mm-hmm.
maybe after the rain. Definitely, I've killed some deer, like, in the light drizzle, that cold light drizzle, yep. November.
I love that.
Oh, and, like, midday on them hunts, where if you can catch it right when the rain ends or right when that drizzle ends, it could turn magical real quick.
I hate to – you're always like, oh, my, this is going to be great. And the last two or three times I've tried that, I went out, and I'm like, all right, I got rain gear for this reason. I'll put on. I'll be nice and dry. About 20 minutes into the drizzle, starts picking up. Next thing you know, it's freaking pouring for the next 45 minutes, yeah. And I'm like, this sucks. I'm wet by that time.
This is a terrible idea.
Terrible idea.
Oh, I remember, I mean, the last time I did it, I was soaked. At one point in time, I was just hunched over my backpack, keeping the stuff in my bag dry, water running down my ass crack. I mean, no. I was
time
soaked.
To go, man.
The bow, I'm like, I don't even know if I could shoot this damn thing right now. It was
my older age. I'm looking through the window of the truck on the gravel road. We'll wait till right when we know it ain't going to rain and I'm out of here.
It was one of those places, like it was a decent walk to that stand. It wasn't like I could just jump down and run to the truck. It was this, I'm going to be soaked no matter what, so I'm going to sit here. And I thought, I mean, the radar says this should not be here very long. And it just kept building back on itself, just pissed on me.
Right.
And finally, I did get down and left because it was horrible.
I've killed some turkeys in the pouring down rain, but I've never killed a deer in the when it's lightning and pouring down rain. But right after it, a couple of these, that one of my bigger ones come from right after the drizzle.
Yeah, I can
just
see that.
Stopped and he was by himself and reacted to a snort wheeze too. That first week of November, I've had so much luck with a snort wheeze. They'll come to the tree, a couple of them.
Do you do blind calling? Or
no, I don't.
So you wait till you see something, then
and
you call.
You can kind of tell by the deer's attitude. Like right. one of the bigger ones was tearing up a tree in the bottoms and the thick stuff. I could see him, and, I mean, he looked pissed. I grunted one time. He looked at me or looked up, snort wheeze, and he was on a dead run at me before I can even get the bow out of the tree.
Oh, wow.
But, I mean, he was in that mood where
– right. Right.
Yeah. This is my place, and I'm getting ready to run off something. Now, sometimes, you know, they don't want nothing to do with that stuff, but it definitely helps. That first week of November, you better have the grunt tube and the snort wheeze.
Yeah.
And I never do blind call. I always say I'm going to because you hear – I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't work. My place is so thick that I could see where it would work
because
you can't see very
well. I think everybody's had different experiences here and there, but, like, my biggest bow kill to date, I blindly rattled in.
Right.
Now, was he coming anyways?
Right.
Who knows?
See, it's hard.
Because, you know, I did a blind rattle, and then within 2 minutes he was there. So was he already walking that way?
Right.
And the rattle didn't bother him?
Right.
Who knows? But that's about the only time I've tried that, and it's actually done something.
See, I feel like I take 10 steps to get into the tree to be quiet, scent free. I've walked a half mile out of the way to get in this. Well, I didn't want to start banging horns together and making all this racket. But
that's a good point.
That's where – but, I mean, it definitely works, you know. It definitely – the
it
time's
can,
right.
Yeah.
We used to go to Tacoma when we were kids and rattle, and we'd rattle in 10 bucks a morning, you know, back before they hunted it. And, yeah, definitely can work.
Just to see if they'd come
yeah,
in.
Yeah, we used to rattle them when we were kids and videotape.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool.
Scott used to do it all the time too, yeah. I mean, you used to get some nice deer coming.
I think a lot of it has to do with, like, the individual deer too.
Absolutely,
I mean,
in the mood they're in.
Yep.
You know, if they got a doe, they're not too worried about that. But
I'll never forget a deer that I nicknamed him Sub-Zero. That was the deer that one year I saw him on the hoof. It was during a rut, and he came from behind me just moving. I mean, he was on a mission, gets out to the field edge, probably 80 yards from me, and he was going to keep working away from me, and I'm like, I'm gonna try to get him in here. So I snort wheezed, and I could tell he couldn't hear me. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to bang them together and see what happens. And I started hitting the rattle bag, and I've never seen a deer run away so fast in my life.
That's
horrible
feeling, too.
It looked like his
freaking
tail went under his legs and just
I'm out.
That's
just like I smacked him in the ass.
Right.
And I'm sitting there like, okay.
See, I got picked to hunt Blue Springs Lake, and I just thought, you know, it's time. I'm going to snort wheeze at everything, grunt, you know. This is probably the only time I'll ever be able to hunt here.
Right.
And they weren't reactive to it at all. Now, I don't know if that's because people are out there rattling all the time and they hear all
that's
that.
That's the experience I've had is the same. I always go hunt this one stand the night before rifle.
Right.
For the last few years anyways. And I always see deer and I've never been able to get up on them, but I always call on them, and I know they can hear it. I mean,
right.
They're only 60 to 100 yards away. I know they can hear it. They look over, and they're like, nah, I ain't messing with that. I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're big deer. I mean, not monsters or nothing, but, you know, mature deer.
Right.
I would have thought, you know, they'd try something, but nope.
I've killed probably I've had more luck with the snort wheeze than anything. I think I've probably killed 4 or 5 that snort wheeze them right to the tree, like ready to fight, where are you at, and put an arrow in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably specific to where you are. I mean,
absolutely.
You know,
time
where you're hunting your 45 acres could be different than, you know, someone that's 45 acres in right. a city.
It's,
you know,
yeah, it's timing too in the right deer. They got a doe if they're in that mood where they just lost their doe and they're looking for another one and they're running everything off. But I had one on that 7 acres, a nice buck that I thought I was going to get killed, and he had a doe, and there was four or five other bucks, and they're all little ones, and then him, and he was busy. He didn't have time to deal with
he didn't
me.
Have time to mess with you.
All he cared about was that doe, and if them other bucks got close to that doe, he'd run them off. But I threw everything at him, and nope.
Yeah.
And I had him close. I mean, 30 yards, but where he needed to be, he never got, and that was on 7 acres. And
yeah.
That was finally after all the work planning it, him to come through here. This is how I'm going to approach it, and it all paid off other than he didn't get in that one little window, and it was right. close, though. But, I mean, that was fun. That was a Thursday after work on 7 acres, and I seen five bucks, bunch of does. Yeah. And, yeah.
I want everybody to listen to what he just said. How many acres?
Seven.
7 acres.
Yes.
You know, you can literally be a killer. I mean.
Well,
I don't know that if you know the exact number, but how many good bucks, let's say over 140 inches, have you killed in your life? At least 20?
I don't know about that high.
I mean,
if I'm measuring them, maybe. But there's a lot over 125.
Let's say
here for
130
sure.
inch deer, 120 inch deer. Probably, I mean, those are all good deer.
Right, 15 probably.
At least.
Or 20.
I mean, and a lot of that is on property that's not even 50 acres.
Well, that one I almost killed on the 7 acres. I was 10 foot from a driveway. Mm-hmm. And then probably 60 yards from a paved road. So
yeah.
it was a river cut through there, and that's where I wouldn't say they were on my place a lot, but when they were moving, they ran that river. I put a food plot in to kind of get them there more than what they were there.
Maybe bring them on your side of that river. Yes, yep.
Maybe yeah. before they're going out to the big fields, hit my place on the way out, maybe during daylight hours. But that was just that doe running that river, and then bucks were all in there chasing her, and I was on top of it.
Right.
The following year, I almost killed one in there, too. I had him on that river on the other side, snort wheezed him in, come to the river, wouldn't cross it, made scrapes and rubs up all down the yeah. river, which I think if I would have had a decoy, he would have charged across the river. And
yeah.
But, like, he couldn't see anything, so he
wouldn't have to take the effort to come across.
Man, and yeah. he was within 30 yards. I could see steam coming out of his mouth. Mm, I mean, yeah,
cool.
that was a good morning, man.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
So, and that he came across the driveway to get to me, so it's just –
yeah, it's,
they're there, you know, right time of the year, and put your work in, you can see yeah. deer.
They can be anywhere. That's the point with small property. You know, everybody freaks out. Not freaks out, but, you know, people talk about, well, I just don't have the land. Yeah. Well, do you got, you know, half an acre?
Right.
I mean, that might be difficult.
I ask 10 people a year if I can turkey hunt, probably, deer hunt. It's a lot easier to get into small land than big tracts. You know, you go ask a 200-acre farm, we lease it, or
yeah.
family hunts it. You go ask the guy that's got 20 acres that butts up against that has a little timber, probably nobody's asking to hunt, period.
Right. Yeah.
And now you be nice to them, do the right thing, and then you're hunting.
Yeah.
And then that's – you have a couple of them little pieces of property where you can hunt them on the off weekends that ain't the great weather, ain't the right wind.
Yep.
Go in there, get the hunt. You're outside. You're not blowing your best spot out. That's the only way to go.
That's a good call.
I killed a turkey on 20 acres this year that had – 3 trees on it, you know. I could see the guy's house. It was just close to where they were at, you know. And that guy probably never been asked to hunt before, but.
And he's like, what the hell is this guy doing here?
Yeah. So,
but got 45 minutes, Jeff walking out with a turkey. Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Which is different now when we were kids. I don't
see,
think
that goes right back to my point of he's a killer.
Yeah.
That's you know, good. I think, honestly, you just made another good point to reading maps.
Right.
You probably looked and said, this isn't where they are, but they're just right here.
Right.
All I need is for them to be right here, you know, at a moment.
Right. It was 200 acres that I called the farmer, mm-hmm. found out who owned it, and he said, no, we've had family, friends hunt it for 30 years.
Yeah.
So then started looking around. And like the little 10 and 20 acre tracts you usually can get into.
Right.
Because not everybody's knocking on that door, you know. And, I mean, you can make it happen. It's a little grindy sometimes, you know. Sometimes it don't work out, but – better than sleeping in and not going. So.
Yeah, and you're never going to have those stories if you don't
right.
go. I mean, I don't have 200 acres. I can't, you know, I can't hunt north winds or, you know, that's one of my biggest issues at my small property is, well, sometimes, you know, I've got nice thick bedding on the south side, and I don't really want to mess with them, so right. I don't really get to hunt north winds a lot.
I'm the same way. North wind's bad for me.
But I might try it here and there.
If it's the
you know, there's been times, like you were saying before, I've asked the neighboring landowner if I could access from the south absolutely. With a north wind, and you know he's been nice enough to say yes. And, you know, I haven't had success yet, although right. I guess I was kind of successful that one year. I walk in, and I'm like, they've got to be bedded back here. This is the only spot that I would think they're at right now here. So I hunted a north wind, asked if I could walk through his field. He said, sure. And I'm as quiet as I could be, and as soon as I get to the edge of the timber, there he stands up and takes off.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I was right.
My execution didn't work.
Right in on
it. Right. So just keep learning off that. Yeah. You know, like I've changed my ways up. Like that 7 acres, I was coming down the neighbor's driveway and cutting in, which I thought would be perfect. And I kept blowing deer out coming down that driveway. Mm-hmm. And that spot ended up being walking right through the middle of the food plot, which I hate doing. Mm-hmm. Right to the stand, right where that was the way to get in there, where my best chance of not running deer out of there instead of going around. But I learned that after a couple of years of, like, man, I just blew all the deer out coming down this way. But
right,
yeah. So once you find that bulletproof entry and exit, that's something you need to take advantage of. So
and that's easier to do on small property.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, honestly, it's not a bad thing to have small ground. Yeah, yeah. You're not gonna have the deer there all the time or the guy there every day, but right. You know, it only takes you, like you said, that one time. And you know, you look at your maps, figure out where they might be coming from, what you want in a spot,
pinch points big time.
And I was just getting ready to ask you, you know, if you look at your spot and figure out where could I hunt, and if you can figure out a way to hunt every type of wind situation in a small piece of property. Awesome.
Right. Awesome.
If you've got access that way.
Right.
And, which, you know.
Sometimes that access is tough, but, I mean, you put in all this work, all this time, and you're trying to kill the biggest deer in the woods, why not take a little bit more time going a long way around, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you're only going to have 4 days to hunt on small property, this is it. You better throw everything you got at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
North winds are tough on me, and I've thought about putting a boat
which
on
which sucks during the rut. Because
right,
you
which
get
you
that
love
lot.
A north wind, which I usually wait till it turns a little westerly.
Yeah.
But I've thought about putting a boat on the river in my early days, floating down and coming in on the south side. I just never did it.
I'm which sure
I've,
that would work.
I've thought about it now. Oh, yeah. I even dug steps in the bank planning on it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could see myself at 5 a.m. with a bow, some John boat that I've gotten from somewhere. Like, yeah, never did it. Wish I would have. I may still do it, though.
But. Yeah. Well, and, you know, you start noticing things, too, with your smaller property where you're like, okay, yeah, a north wind is bad here. But if it's coming out of the northwest a little bit, I can try this.
Right.
And we talked, I think we said something about, was our last episode, Micah?
Maybe.
Where we were like, you know, it's that wind where they almost bust you.
Yeah, you kind of want to cut the wind or whatever, where you're just about busted.
You know.
Which I got one on a hillside that it seems like it swirls. Like it's the right wind, but it gets by me, and it just
comes right back.
Right. You're
like, what the hell?
And then you learn on that, too. After,
yeah, wind is land specific, too. Absolutely. Like it'll say south, but if you got hills or something, it'll push it around different ways. And yeah.
And sometimes you just can't win, you know, especially big deer. I don't care what you do. That's why first week, 10 days of November, you get a little more on your side because they're chasing does. Yeah. But, yeah, it's tough.
On the wind side, do you use any type of wind check or anything?
Yeah, the little
Bottle?
Yeah, which I got, you know, get to be where you're over the top of checking it and so nervous about the wind. And
well, so I was just going to ask you if you've ever used this because this is how I got into it. I have a spot at my small property where – I like southwest winds, and if I can get them, it's great. And then I have this particular spot that I've got a stand in, and sometimes with a southwest wind, you'll get into the stand, and you'll check it, and right back north it's going. Yeah. And it's right off a creek bank. It's on a creek, and right. You're like, damn it. My sons went out in our field a couple years ago and picked a bunch of milkweed. Oh, you nice. Know, little milkweed pods.
Right, yeah.
And then brought it in the house, and you know, I was like, oh, thanks, boys, and dried it out, and I started taking that with me. And what I noticed is, and obviously it's different everywhere, but I would drop that milkweed and it would suck back north. And then as it would try to start going back up that hill, it'd just drop right back south again. Right. Which means my wind was going nowhere.
Right.
That's really about the best thing you can ask for.
Right.
But then there's other times you get up in that stand, and if it's strong enough, you can drop it and whoosh, sucks right back into that bedding.
Right.
And have you ever gotten to a spot, although like your one property, it's a decent drive for you to go all the
right.
way to do that. But you ever gotten to a spot, the wind wasn't what you wanted, and you bowed out?
Yes. Definitely in my earlier years, the food plot has to be some kind of westerly wind,
mm-hmm.
or you're just, it's not going to happen. And if it turns east or got some east in it, and or especially north, it's not going to happen. I mean, the odds, he would have to be on a hot dough and then blind to everything, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm wasting my time. I'd rather, which we had another property up there, I could do something, go somewhere, hit another small property that, you know.
Right.
This is my killing. This is what where I'm going to kill them at.
And I could do more damage by staying here today.
Right. Yes.
Than just.
I'm going to get one or two chances, maybe, to kill a nice deer, and it's going to be in this spot or my other spot, and I'm not going to blow them out until. I may hunt it on a bad wind on November 3rd, and this is my last day to hunt. I'm pushing it.
Yeah. You know,
this is the time to push it because that's when they do some weird things, man. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's certain spots where. Like, I got one of my spots. I can get away with different winds. You know, they do kind of come from every which direction, which if it's
just
the right.
Depends on what day.
Right. Yeah. And you push it, which the one I killed 2 years ago, he come in dead downwind with a doe. I mean, directly behind me, wind right in his face, made a scrape, were there for 10 minutes and never even acknowledged I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But just blind, just on that doe. And there was another buck in there that he was messing with.
Love struck.
Oh, man. Cost him his life.
Now, what about, like, leading up to the season? How much time are you spending in those real small properties as far as getting your stands ready, your food plots and stuff?
I try to do all my work in August, July, August.
So you go in there one time and that's it?
I do, you know, trim the food plot or trim the trees, you know, check your stands, make sure they're all good. I did do some work this year, added some shooting house for my boys. And actually did get a picture of a big one the day after doing all that work, which was surprising. But
yeah.
That's, you know, a little salt in the wound. Like, I'm here. Now let you know.
It's like a giant middle finger.
Yeah.
Just to let you know I am here, sir.
You brought a bobcat and disturbed all this. I'm going to let you know I was sleeping here, man. But, yeah, and then usually by September, I usually like to throw my food plot seed down last week in August. If there's some rain chance, maybe. First weekend of September, if you can mm-hmm. catch a rain, you can get a good stand of clover pretty quick, and then I stay out of it. I'll do a couple early hunts. I usually kill a doe early, and then once October, it's got to be a cold front or some kind of weather change or
yeah,
preparing mm-hmm. for November
yeah.
or grinding on some of my other spots that, you know, probably not going to have the odds to kill a bigger one. You got a chance. I've killed some deer on my 10 acres in Lone Jack. I mean, there was houses, but I mean, there was deer there. And, I mean, I killed some does, and that's yep. where usually I do my October hunts, where more than likely you're not going to see a lot of big deer, not your best spot.
But you can still go and hunt.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. We're outside, especially with the boys now. I do trout fishing and all that stuff. So middle of October is usually fishing and shooting a bow, preparing for –
getting them ready.
Yes.
And if you would take anything away from today – on small property is if you approach it the right way, basically like Jeff does.
Yeah.
I mean, you can kill deer and you Absolutely. Can kill great deer.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, if I could have a hunting career like Jeff Wilper, I'll be
now.
Happy.
Come on now. Come on now.
I'm telling you, dude. I mean,
come on.
I mean, the amount of, you know, mature bucks you've seen and doing it, you know, not with, and obviously I'm not meaning anything bad, but, you know, it's not like you got dreary property.
No.
You got 3,000 acres that, you know, some of these deer don't ever leave where you live.
Right.
You know, and.
I mean, some properties are better than others.
Oh, you know, for sure.
The 45 I have is a good spot, don't get me wrong. But I think you could approach it totally wrong and it wouldn't be that good, you know.
And it might not be good for years if you screw it up, you know, two straight years, you go in there. Blowing it up because you're in there 40 times in the first, you know, 60 days of the season, you scorch it to the point that they don't come back at all for a couple of years if you keep doing that.
Those and four pointers, little ones, you know.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's what you want to do. That's on you, you know. That's if you want to kill a doe and the first buck you see, I mean, I've done it
More power to you, man.
Yeah, I've did it for years, and I still like to do it. I still like to shoot does. I mean,
gets that heart pumping. It might just be like, all right, let's.
You know, I don't mind eating them either. So, especially with my boys getting older now, we're gonna, I'd say, pile up some does, and hopefully, and approach it a little different with kids. But
yeah, well, sure.
And you know, your neighbors is a big thing with small property. You know, not every small like this 10 acres. I mean, I've tried. Don't get me wrong. This is where I live. I would love to kill a deer here, and it's just not happening.
Yeah,
very hard. There's just not that many deer here. Too many houses, I guess, you know, however it lays. Not a whole lot of food here at all, you know. And I've tried the food plot. And it, I mean, I did get pictures of does, and I think at the right time you could probably kill one, but.
Just not worth it.
No. Some spots, you're just not going to, it's not going to happen.
It's like where I live. I mean.
Same with mine.
Right.
You know.
And I would love for it to be right out the back door, you know. And I've tried everything, but it's tough.
It's funny. The boys, I live on 15 acres, and the boys wanted to put a trail camera down at our pond this year. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. I got an extra one, so we put it out there. And we just checked it a couple days ago for the first time. And there's a doe or a group of does coming every once in a while to drink out of it.
Right.
Because it's been dry. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing, you know, maybe their normal water source might be a little dried up, so they're hopping over. And Caden, can we hunt here? I'm like, Caden, the chances of us ever seeing a deer
in daylight
here are almost zero.
See, when I
but they're here, Dad. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong.
Right. I bow hunted down here when I was 10, 12, 11. You know, it was the only place I go. I couldn't drive, so I tried to make it happen out here, but. Never happened. But
and it passed the time for you, I guess, and absolutely. You probably enjoyed it.
You're still learning, man.
Yeah.
You're still out there. I love trying to figure them out where you can get to a spot where they filter through and never know you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the name of the game. There's some of them trees where they would filter by once they got down or past you, they'd blow out of there. I mean, you still, that's not not good, man. So if you can find that tree where they could do their thing and never know you're there, that's what you're looking for.
And that's another nice thing about small property. You get access to small property. If you approach it the right way, you can figure it out pretty quick. And if it's not worth a crap, you're going to find out pretty fast if it's not a good property and, you know, move on the next year or the next couple of years.
Keep knocking on doors.
Yeah.
Somebody will say yes. I do a lot of that for turkey hunting. Just around home, driving around, see some turkey strutting, try to find out who owns it. And you'll have a lot better luck with small land getting permission than a lot of it's leased up.
Well, hell, remember last year, I think you, or the year before last year, you borrowed my blind because you're like, hey, I got access today to a thing. Can I borrow your blind? I don't have one right now. I'm like, sure.
That's my boys, man. I hate driving 2 hours with boys. Seven and five. We get there. I don't want to hunt. I'm like, we just drove 2 hours, man.
You're hunting. And
they're like, we don't hear a gobble. They're like, let's go home. I'm like, we've been out here for 30 minutes. So if you can find a property close, which is good too. Find these small properties if it ain't happening, or if you're hunting with kids, or you just got off work. That 7 acres is great for me because after I get off work, I could hunt for an hour and a half after work.
Be done. Yep.
Back home. Wife ain't mad. Not gone for 2 days. So definitely. Yeah,
that's the difficult part, you know, of having properties that not where you live. I mean, it'd be great. I used to hunt one that was about an hour away from where I live, but that didn't really feel like I was traveling. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like, yeah, it was, you know, almost an hour, but. You know, it was a place we went to all the time. So it was just like, well, I'm going to go out there and hunt. And,
right.
It's still tougher, though.
But, when you know, when you got a couple-hour drive, that's where it gets harder.
Hauling the tractor or hauling everything up, it's work. We used to hunt down by Arkansas. It was 5 hours. That's where I killed my first deer. We'd leave on Friday and drive all, get up hunt opening day, and pretty much get back in the car and drive all the way home.
That's a long haul.
Yeah. And we killed a lot of deer, but, you know, that was where – that's how I started, was way down there with acorn deer. Very little bucks.
But yeah.
It was fun.
Oh, I don't know. You got to kind of cut your teeth. When you were a kid then?
Yeah. That's where some of my first hunts were down there. Mountain Grove was the name of the town.
Oh, I know where that is. Hell, yeah. That's where my family's originally from, is Norwood.
Right.
A lot of timber. I didn't grow up there, but.
A lot of acorn timber and.
Yep.
A lot of deer, you know, nothing with huge racks, but yeah.
Okay. On the spot, before we end this show, your three biggest pieces of advice. First, how am I going to do this? Your three biggest things you would do hunting a small property that you think would help somebody be successful.
First of all, I'd find out what they need around there. If there's no water hole, food's not far around there, or they have no cover around there. Maybe if there ain't a whole lot of deer, create some cover. See if you can pick up some deer. or if there's no water, one of our places that we used to hunt, I mean, there was just no water around. A little water hole will go a long ways. Mm-hmm. Or like a little clover food plot that they hit before they go out to a big ag field. Just something like that. Approach and exit. You stomp through there and run them out. I mean, you're going to see does and small bucks, but if you're there to kill a big one, he's not going to play with that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not down with that. And then the wind. Be smart about the wind, man, because even if you're on your north side of the property and the wind's wrong, you could be blowing your whole property out.
You know? When it's only 10 acres.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know some people that, like, drive by the ridge. They're going to hunt to get close. And I'm like, you're blowing it out before you even get out of the car, you know, and then they're just –
yeah.
Just gotta know the wind.
That's
especially for big deer. There's a difference between does and yearlings and big deer. They think totally different. You know.
Oh God, yes.
Well, I'm still seeing deer. You're not seeing the deer you want to kill, though.
Right.
You know, they're not. They'll move off the property, or especially in small land, you don't have that many chances.
Right.
You need to have every little thing in your favor if you can make it happen, and then make it happen.
I hate when those small deer. I had two, remember, what would I even nickname it at one point, Micah. Remember those two young deer? I think they were twin yearlings.
Right.
So they didn't have spots anymore, but they were twins. And almost every night at this small property I hunt, they would come down off the bedding and hang out underneath my tree stand. And I'm just like, there's no way they don't smell me.
Right.
My wind is dropping, you know, right, I mean, at the base of my tree, you know, messing around. And while they never knew I was there, they've got to smell me. And I'm like, you know,
probably just didn't know.
In 3 or 4 years, you're going to remember that smell is what I'm worried about.
Nothing worse than the lingering doe around. Like, after a while, yeah. Get out of here.
Yes, move on.
Yeah, once you start stomping your feet, it's like
oh. I want to eat my fudge round.
Leave me alone.
Like the Red Arrow guy, he'll shoot him. Once they start stomping their feet, you got to go.
Yeah. If she blows, she's going.
Yeah, nothing worse. So, yes, definitely approach. Exit, wind, and then whatever you can produce on that little piece that it may could just be a feeder if you can allow to run a feeder in that county.
Until
time to hunt, just to get them used to coming to that little spot,
you know,
which, you know, sometimes they may not be in that little pinch point you need them until you add a little food plot or add feed in the summertime, you know. But definitely you learn that over the years of hunting it and approaching it certain ways.
That's good. So – yeah, find out what they need, approach, and hunt the wind the right way. And I guess in turn on that, you know, don't really blow it out or burn it out by hunting the wrong wind so often.
That and timing, really.
Like, yeah. Oh, find out.
There's no reason for
when
me to
that property is
October
best.
16th on a 75-degree day, you know, south wind.
I learned that quick.
Right.
I mean, when I first started bow hunting, man, it was – I wanted to go hunting.
We hunted every weekend.
And you're sitting out there. Yep. Freaking 90, almost 90 degrees sometimes in September, and all you're doing is
swatting
mosquitoes and pissing your wife off,
right?
You know, because I didn't start hunting until we weren't married then, but you're sitting there going, why am I here September 19th when I could use this day on October 27th,
right?
You know,
when I first bought my place, there were some rifle hunters next to it that hunted right on the line, and rifle season was tough. I mean, they were there with foilers and they like to drive around and do all that. So bow hunting is where I need to be here in bow hunting before they show up. And that's when I got hooked on the last week of October, the first week of November.
Yep.
People ask me, how do I kill more deer or bigger deer? Buy a bow and then get out there last week of October, first week of November, before that rifle season starts, before the deer dry. Because there was deer dry. It was tough, which that property sold, and I don't have them rifle hunters right on top of me anymore, which helps out a lot.
But right.
That's tough when you got deer drives going on.
Do you, I know I just asked you to give your three final thoughts, but do you ever, do you pay attention to what neighboring hunters are doing?
Absolutely.
You know, do you almost use them against themselves?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially with small property.
Maybe where I park,
mm-hmm.
certain winds where I park, if they're there, I hate to be that guy, but if my wind's blowing towards them, I'll go ahead and park right here. More than likely, the deer are not going to come from across
that
the road
direction.
To the north where they're at.
There's
a pinch point where they cross the road on me, and they're using the same pinch point. It's just on their side. Well, bow hunting, I'm using that, and I'm parking a half mile down the road because
mm-hmm.
they're not there. Well, they have a shooting house there come rifle season. Well, there's no reason for me to walk that far when they're not letting anything through more than likely. Right. Which I know them, and that's how they like to hunt. They shoot deer, which I'm fine with that. Yeah. So.
And sometimes, I mean, they're helping you.
Absolutely.
I mean, the last two rifle seasons I've had on one property, luckily the wind's been coming out of the right direction, and the guys that hunt that property only rifle hunt, which is perfectly fine.
Right.
But he doesn't pay attention to nothing.
Right.
So he's walking in with the wind to his back, and he's just blowing all the deer out.
Right. That's when I like to get somewhere early. If you know somewhere like that where you know they're going to be in there, you want to be in there before they
Funny you should say that, because I'm usually last year when I killed my large deer, I was in my tree stand almost an hour before first light.
Right. In some spots, that's not the, some spots that ain't the best thing. Sliding in there, that 7 acres, it seemed like sliding in there a little bit after daylight. Seemed like I blew them out of that spot.
Really?
When I tried to get in there super early. But, you'll learn that over the years. But
right.
And timing, too. I've killed a lot of deer between 10 and 2 o'clock, which is a tough sit. When I used to take the week off, I'd grind all-day hunts. I mean, I've got 6 days. I'm not going to go back and sit at camp. Nobody's there, So,
right.
And that it's a long day. Don't get me wrong, but I've killed that one right behind you come from 11 o'clock, that 10-pointer.
Really?
Yes. Hadn't seen a deer all morning. 11 o'clock, he started fighting with another one, snort-wheezed him to the tree. Where most times I would be back at camp or.
Right.
Yeah.
Taking a nap.
10 to 2, first week of November can be magical, man. And not a lot of people,
And a lot of people, I mean, they got to get stuff done during the mid
Absolutely.
Part of the day. But what do they call it? Midday madness and elk hunting. And I'm sure you can have midday madness with a deer.
Absolutely. If you have the time, man, take advantage of it. Pack a lunch, whatever you got to do.
It can be difficult.
Yes. It can be some long sits, man. 5 days of all-day sits.
Going back on our last show. What's your favorite tree stand snack?
Ooh.
When you have to have the all-day stuff. Like we were talking, I don't even take food most of the time.
Yeah, we don't take very much.
See, that's what, when I was younger, I just grind and no food, no water. Now I'm like, well, no doubt it was miserable. Why not?
Hungry.
Why not pack a lunch or something? Not even a drink. All I was just focused on deer, but. I hate to say it, but it's 5-hour energy drinks and cosmic brownies, man.
Cosmic brownies.
Just straight health,
pounding
man.
Monsters and cosmic brownies.
Yeah, 5-hour energies, man.
If you have not learned anything from our show, it is that we are the most healthy eaters. And we have the most healthy eating guest on.
Yep.
There are. Our last show, we talked about our favorite snacks, and it was fudge rounds, gushers. What else?
Swiss rolls.
Swiss cake rolls.
Yeah, all kinds of junk food.
Yeah, junk food. Exactly.
It gives you the sugar high.
You ever take coffee to the stand? Like, I'm a coffee drinker.
I don't drink coffee.
I'm a coffee drinker, and then I'm like, why have I never taken a thermos of coffee to the stand?
I've taken it a handful of times on them real cold days, but for the most
Wouldn't that just make you want to pee a lot, though?
Yeah, but I get in that mode where I'm grinding. It's like, I don't even want to make a noise. Well, it gets to where I've taken it almost too serious where you're not having fun anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to unzip my bag and the rattle and the horns. Like, no, I'm not making noise. So.
Right.
But, yeah, cosmic brownie is hard to beat. 10 o'clock.
Funny, you said I had one of those before I came over.
That 10 to 2, man, can get delirious. Now, when it's off and it's not happening, that 10 to 2 can be
horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
You're talking 5 hours of nothing. No squirrels, hardly anything.
Yeah.
And that makes a tough sit, man. But
that's when it's time for a nap.
Yeah. Well, like – especially you got 4 days, man. You better make it happen. You better that time, that first week of November, you got to be in stand as long as you can possibly be,
right?
Without making anybody mad, getting in trouble at home.
Yep.
I mean, you got to be doing some grinding because you never know what'll happen then.
And those small properties could be the spot, like you were saying, that they bring
absolutely.
It. And,
absolutely.
I mean, you could have a freaking random, madhouse at your place.
Random times when farmers are out doing something, or especially turkey hunting's the same way. They'll be on that big property to do their stuff with their hands, and then they leave. And that's you could pick them up from that 9 to 11 on your smaller piece off the main
right.
big chunk of land. Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
I get it. Well, let's tie a bow on that one. Folks, Jeff is, in my opinion, one of the best small property hunters I've ever known. So, I think it's somebody who has some good knowledge that can talk about, hunting small property. And there's... like we've said in the show, there's got to be a lot of people that hunt nothing but small little tracts of land. And, maybe they haven't been paying attention to what they were doing as much. And maybe this will kind of give
Absolutely.
Them the nudge to go, hey, maybe I'll stop going in there so much from September 15th to October 1st. Maybe
right.
I'll chill out a little bit, that sort of stuff.
Which the cameras don't lie if they're not coming in daylight.
Cameras are nice. Yes. Not everybody gets those.
But cameras have changed the game where, you know, if everything's at night, you don't need to be stomping around there and wait for the right wind, wait for the right time. Pressure, pressure, pressure.
Yep. Play it smart. Well, buddy, thanks for coming on.
Loved it.
And
didn't think I could talk for an hour, but.
Well, we actually talked for more like two.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I think I'm ready to keep going, man. Let's start telling stories.
Let me just hit stop and we'll start again.
Right. Yep.
All right. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right. See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.